All right, welcome, folks. This is Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com. And as you know, I'm making an effort to speak to some really interesting content creators who are using Brighteon in the free speech mode, or the platform, in order to ask some big questions and have some great guests on and talk about things that are important in our world. And one of the men that got my attention on this is Daniel Christos, and his channel is called Ball Busters, but it's B-A-A-L, like the demon name, Ball Busters. And he's on Brighteon, and he's on Rumble, and he's got a channel called Ball Buster Studios on Telegram as well. Daniel, welcome to the show, to the interview. It's great to have you on.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, it's just great to have you here. I've seen some of your episodes. You're doing some real good journalism. You're asking questions. You know, you're having good guests on. Tell us, since this is the first time I've been able to interview you, tell us about your world and what you do and why the name Ballbusters to start with. So give us a little background.
Okay. So about, I want to say like probably like 8 years ago, you know, my wife and I, at the time it was my girlfriend, but we were considering, and when she did get pregnant, and you know, she started doing a whole bunch of research herself. So I'm gonna hand the credit over to her for initiating that. But it was about like a year after we started considering, right, that she finally did, and she started looking into vaccines, childbirth, how hospitals work, pediatricians, like tons and tons of stuff. And she compiled a ton of information. I mean, we had like a stack of paper, maybe 2 inches thick on our top of our computer, of all the things that were negative about the procedures that were just commonplace. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about even just like cutting the cord too soon, you know, and not letting the nutrients in, all these things. And she compiled all this information, and she and I had a, you know, like a little thing set up, like written out and notarized and made it legal and official, so that when time came for her to deliver, they already had this agreement that they weren't going to do certain things and that they were going to do other things before she, you know, before we even agreed to go into a hospital setting for her to have give birth to our daughter.
Very
so
smart.
That, yeah. And that whole process made me start like looking into things. I was always a reader, but I never, like, I used to collect books. Let's put it that way. You know, I would buy books and they would be nice little decorations, but I started actually opening them up and reading them finally. And that might be a common story for a lot of people. I don't know.
Right, true.
But your best intentions, they all sound good. And then you're like, oh man, you feel daunted when you actually have to start getting into it. But I started reading, and I was on the elliptical reading a lot, because I can put them as like, you know, e-books or whatever. So I was reading a lot and exercising, and I think that helped retain information, because you're doing a physical activity while you're learning something at the same time or reading something. Yeah. So, you know, motion creates emotion, like they said, and I think it was Boiler Room, or maybe it was Wall Street, one of those movies about sales. But yeah, so I started reading all this stuff, and I started getting really concerned, because everything that I thought I knew from high school and college just didn't seem like it applied to the real world. Uh-huh. And I was like, man, I should actually share this information. Like, we had already had this idea of creating brochures with the information that Rebecca learned from the vaccines and all that stuff to hand to expecting mothers. And we were going to do all that. And then we moved and things got put in a box and all that other stuff. But I started making these videos maybe 4.5 years ago. And I was reading from Murder by Injection by Eustace Mullins. I was reading from Behold a Pale Horse by William Cooper. And as time rolled on, I kept on reading and reading, you know, and then all of a sudden, boom, 2019, we get the whispers. 2020, we're full blown. And then my business gets shut down for 2.5 months in San Diego. We were already living in Yuma at the time, thank God. But we had to figure out how to keep life going with our store closed. Uh-huh. And yeah, that's when I had a lot of extra time too. So I started reading more, making more videos. And I was still cutting my teeth. I was pretty amateur. When I look back at it, like, I thought everything was amazing. But when I look back at it, I'm like, well, I'm a lot better now.
And experience counts, yeah.
I guess within the last year, I started really taking guests on. It was kind of like a new thing to me. Yeah. And Dr. Artis was one of the first people I reached out to, because he was on one of my friends at the time show, The Fact Hunter.
Yeah.
So shout out to him.
Definitely, yeah. Dr. Artis, we love your work. In fact, I've got a little lab experiment that I owe him involving a substance and a clot that anyway, we'll share it with you as soon as I have some details, but I've had some setbacks in the lab and we're trying to catch up.
And maybe we can talk about that a little bit later too, because I'm just curious what the components, what it's made of, if we've actually pinned that down yet.
You know, there are some,
if it's like natural or unnatural.
My best guess currently is that it's something, it's made of natural molecules that the body does manufacture, but it's not natural that it's manufactured inside arteries and veins and in these enormous sizes. That's my best guess. But there's also other elements. I mean, I want to talk about you, and because I want to introduce people to you and your philosophy. We could spend like an hour on clots, but we'll cover that in a later thing. Give us more background, because, you know, I want to know how you got into this and how you chose the name Ball Busters and what's your philosophy and all that. Go ahead.
So through the research and the reading, because I got like everything I do, I get obsessed about. If I work out, I get obsessed about it, do all the time. Same thing with reading. So one question leads to another, and the curiosity brings you to this book and then that book. And I started reading a lot of history. And then analyzing it and then looking at it through, you know, trying to make a comparison between then and now and seeing if there's anything that I recognized in the behaviors of people who seem to be oppressive at this moment and where I could see if I could trace them throughout history. And this is kind of what my book is going to be about. I'm actually writing a book called Mook's Noble Cause, because it seems like they have the common like MO, modus operandi, of liking to harm children or feeling like they need to in order to appease a god. So the Ball Busters thing was about the cult of Ball, because when you look at the Ugaritic texts, there isn't really a whole lot there that explains why they would sacrifice children. It's pretty much the priestcraft that was in that area at the time, influencing the rulers and things like that to actually do that in order to appease the gods. So it's more like a corruption thing than it was really about the actual texts. And, you know, as time goes on, you have different rulers, different things, Carthage, you've got... So I started realizing that these things kind of all have the same kind of pattern recognition to them. So why not start from the beginning and say, we're busting, you know, like Ghostbusters. I'm from New York, so it's like Ghostbusters, but it's Ball Busters. So we're going to point out and say Jacuzzi to the people who are responsible and explain their, you know, how they've hid themselves and their true identity throughout history. And that's pretty much what my show is about.
Wow. And I was just thinking earlier today, by the way, about the mythos of Little Red Riding Hood, and I think that comes out of Europe. And really, Little Red Riding Hood is a story about, I think, a kind of transgender man creature that preys upon little children. And the story was designed to warn children away from these predators that have existed in throughout society, throughout history, that would try to dress up as women in order to appear harmless and then prey upon little children. Are you finding that kind of mythos reflected throughout historical cultures?
Yeah. As far back as ancient Roman times, there is what they would call it as men who are mostly women. That was however it was translated. And they would group them up, and the people that would follow these certain practices were young children, impressionable people, basically. Those who were, you know, mentally unstable. They also grouped in women, but, you know, it was a patriarchal society, so you got to kind of understand that before you get too offended by that. And then they were talking about men who are mostly women.
Wow.
And that's an indication that they're talking about, you know, I just picked that up a couple weeks ago, that they were referring to that when they were coming across other cultures. And that's kind of interesting. And then when you look at like the Sabbatean Frankists, you know, sodomy is a big thing. You know, they get into that an awful lot. And it's kind of, even in the forming years of our country during the 1770s, there were people writing saying that we need to prevent this from happening, because anytime it happens in any culture, it destroys the nation. Whatever you want to make of that, I think it's what they're talking about is just the perverse end of it. I mean, people consenting, adults, whatever they want to do is what they want to do. I think what they're saying is rampant normalization and absolutely no, you know, no holds barred, basically, as to how they can impose that upon others who wouldn't be interested in something like that.
Right.
I think that's what they're getting at, because, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah, you know, that's where you get the word from. And then throughout history, like the Sabbatean Frankists are big on changing children into a different gender. And that came from Sabbatai Zevi. Go ahead.
Well, are you familiar with the Calhoun mouse utopia experiments? Have you looked into that?
Mouse utopia experiment? That sounds really familiar.
I covered it a few weeks ago, but it's really related to what you're talking about, because Calhoun was a scientist in the 1960s, I believe, late 50s and early 60s. He ran these mouse utopia experiments where he put mice into an actual physical structure, like 12 feet in diameter, with unlimited food. So it was a welfare state. And within just a few generations, they had a population explosion, but then the offspring began to lack any skills of survival or socialization. And then within a few more generations, he documented this over and over again. They ran this many times. There would pedophilia in mice began to emerge, because then the males would try to hump or try to mount the child mice. The women took on men's roles, and a lot of women became completely disinterested in sex or anything other than self-grooming and eating and sleeping. And they were called the beautiful ones, and they would groom themselves all day and just eat and sleep and not have sex. That was in mice. It sounds related to some of the things you're finding.
Yeah, you know, it makes sense. I mean, what happened with the socialization of Roman Empire? It crumbled, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was a socialist society, if you get really right down to it, towards the end. It's also kind of funny that mosquitoes, I've learned, are actually pedophiles. When the eggs are hatching, they go down there and they impregnate. So that's an interesting thing that just happens in nature, right? The things that cause most of the disease are also a little funky in that area.
Oh, weird. Okay. But, pedophile mosquitoes. I'll have to add that to my list. Yeah. I did not know that one.
Right. It's a weird one. You know what I find coming up a lot that has a lot of overlay on to the social engineering of society is the Milgram experiment.
Yeah, for sure.
And the Stanford Prison Experiment.
Definitely. Those 100%.
Two. And the lack of Socratic, you know, critical thinking in addition to that. I mean, those things speak volumes as to what actually we're faced with.
The Milgram
right now.
Experiments, I think, were so so germane to what we saw during the COVID. You know, forcing kind of like the vaccine police and the mask police, forcing this upon other people, even though those people were suffering.
Exactly.
So it's like, oh, your child has to be masked, and the kid's crying, kind of like in the Milgram experiments. It's like stop the shocking, but you were ordered by the authority to keep doing it. And so many people go along with that. What didn't the Milgram experiments find that something like 75%, I forgot the number, would just go along with anything?
I think it was 68 or something like that. It was high.
Yeah.
And they would do the lethal 450 volt or whatever, even though it wasn't actually attached to anything. They didn't know that. They thought that they were actually giving somebody a lethal electrocution.
Right.
So that's... What's the title of the Stanford Prison Experiment. Oh, go ahead.
Yes. Well, just remind us, what's the title of your book again?
It's still in the process of being written. It's about halfway through, but it's going to be called Most Noble Cause. It's a Ballbusters book one, Most Noble Cause, because what we're trying to do here is identify the threats against the children throughout history and try to identify what they're trying to do now. So, I mean, it's kind of going to have a flair of these little ones to it, but we're not going to get too deep into the SRA type of stuff. It's just going to be historically, why does this happen? Who does it and how to prevent it? You know, how to identify it so you know you're not walking around with predators with your children and things like that, where they will crop up, how they will manipulate. And, you know, you don't have to go too far now. You can just go to school and find them. So.
Or go to your local library at Drag Queen Day or whatever.
Right.
Okay, anyway. Keep us posted about your book, because I can tell you're a great researcher. You read a lot, you absorb a lot of information. And I think your book could be really compelling. So I appreciate you sharing that with us.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And what else are you working on?
Oh, you know, the thing that just happened last night, when it's very sad to hear, I just wanted to kind of like maybe, you know, share a little time with this. Lynette Hardaway, everybody knows as Diamond,
right,
passed away. And I was reading Dr. Artis's email that he sent out, and I was like, oh my God. So I started looking online, and you know, the filth of Twitter popped up in somebody's editorial. And it was such irresponsible journalism. See, I have a problem with this. The things I have an issue with mostly with people, and when I start to criticize, so I, you know, I'm an English major. I've been writing since I was 16, you know, short stories or whatnot. When I hear and see bad grammar and people that are supposedly professional, it drives me nuts. Grammar police, whatever you want to call it. But when you there should be a certain bar, and when you're bumping your head on it, you're not really supposed to be there. And the filth and rumor spreading that I cannot stand.
Oh,
if you don't have solid information, don't publish it, don't print it. You're just trying to throw stuff at the wall because, you know, media has no integrity. So it was all COVID this, COVID that, she didn't get vaccinated. And I'm like, that's it. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. I jumped onto a live stream for Rumble and I started picking apart what they were saying about this nice, wonderful, amazing woman who now cannot defend herself. And in the worst timing, no consideration, no sentiment, no nothing for these, for Lynette. And it infuriated me.
Yes.
So I read Dr. Artis's write up from his email. And then I went into, you know, now this is going to upset you guys. And I read what, you know, there was one good one from the Washington Examiner that was just pretty straightforward. And then the other one I read was some stupid publisher, something to do with, I don't even care. But that one, they listed a bunch of people's tweets. And the article title was about the unvaccinated blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you guys are unbelievably unconscionable, horrible human beings.
Yeah.
You know, if I was ever going to be a eugenicist, you'd be on the top of the list, but I'm not, but whatever.
You know? No, but the thing is that these, so many of the vaccine pushers, they want unvaccinated people to die and they celebrate it. Whereas those of us who are not taking the vaccines, we pray for the vaccinated to not die. Right.
There's a difference there.
That
isn't
says
there,
everything.
Mike? Right.
Yeah, we don't really want harm to come to anybody.
Just so they can be right. I mean, how little power must you have in your own life if that's how you perceive, to feel like you're smarter than someone else or smug? You know, like, is that really what it is? That cheap selfishness that you desire over human emotions?
No, and it's
just
crazy.
It's just so sick.
And when
the way they were talking about her, it was just got me mad. Sorry.
I know. I mean, in my podcast, I just said, let's say a prayer for Diamond and, you know, her amazing voice, her courage, her willingness to speak out and tell the truth and challenge the establishment, all those things. And those are properties that everybody would do well to live a life with purpose that examines or demonstrates those properties, right? So the fact that she has passed away, I got to tell you, she lived a life with more purpose than so many people who live and die with more years but less meaning, right? I think you would agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, 100%. And that kind of leads into what I was going to say, what else I work on. I had the opportunity and the good fortune of finding Dr. Stefan Lanka early on in my research. Mm-hmm. He's a German virologist, been around forever. He challenged HIV and AIDS and the connection there long ago when he was still a young boy.
Uh-huh.
but he actually found that there's phagocytes that they mislabel as virus.
Yeah.
And these phagocytes go in when there's a tissue that is damaged and they add nucleic acid to it to actually help to rebuild it. So when that thing gets swarmed by these things, they're like, that's the virus. Or they'll say that it's the, the little, they call it the little fingers, at least he did, but it's like the, what they call the spike protein part of the, of like a, it's actually, It could potentially be something that's more in line with the rebuilding of the tissues. So it's interesting to see, like, when you look through like Virchow from 1852, I believe 52 or 56, we've been basing everything off of a guy who never did control experiments for anything, because he wasn't trained that way. Also, you know, Freemasonic, when everybody else was unable to be working, he was able to continue his research because he was in the military. Plus, you know, he had a he was basically protected, connected and protected, if you will. Mm-hmm. And his stuff got promoted. So it was just a matter of, you know, what they're going to print and run with. There was several other people along that process, and you started asking yourself, well, what is virology then? You know, and what is the germ theory? Because Pasteur has been outdated for quite a long time. They haven't been able to do or recreate any type of, you know, contagion / infection with his methodology. So what's going on? Well, and even when they went to go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, in my mind, there's no question that the germ theory is incomplete. I mean, there are obviously some things about it that can be very useful to understand, but kind of like Newtonian physics versus, you know, advanced atomic level or subatomic particles or quantum physics and so on. There's a deeper level of understanding about terrain and so on that
conceptualization. Like to get the base ground, but then how it actually operates, I think that's where they get the mistakes.
Absolutely.
Know what I mean? Like the actual mechanisms are kind of off.
So
they're observing, Daniel, but they're not sure what they're observing, you know?
Completely agree. And plus, when they can't isolate it, there's another big question. But this has been really intriguing, and I apologize for the short format. However, I want to say that I really look forward to talking to you again in the future because, you know, you're bright, you're curious, right? And you're willing to ask questions, and that I absolutely share those properties with you. Let me just give out your channel names again for people. It's Ballbusters, B-A-A-L, like the demon name, Ballbusters. You're on Brighteon.com. You're on Rumble. You're on Telegram. Are there any other platforms people can find you?
JoshuTV.com is an independent free speech platform as well. I've been on there for 4.5 years when YouTube kicked me off twice.
Ah.
And I got eliminated from Twitter. There's 4.5 years, 446 videos on there.
How do you spell?
Josh, J-O-S-H. Okay.
Yeah. How do you spell that?
Okay. Yeah. JoshuWhoTV.com.
Oh,
and
Josh,
he's like a one guy. Yeah, he's like one guy who's a code writing genius. He used to have a huge channel on YouTube called Seeking the Truth.
Uh-huh.
And they demonetized him and then they deleted him. But he's also on Rumble as Seeking the Truth. And he's quite a good friend of mine. So we work on trying to build up his site too, as well as, you know, being on other people's sites to cross pollinate. And Brighteon's a great addition to that for sure. I would appreciate being on there.
We are working hard to continue to make it better as well. All right. Well, thank you, Daniel. This has been a really intriguing conversation, and I'm so thankful that you're using Brighteon.com to, you know, spread the truth, ask questions, ask big questions. And I really appreciate you spending time with me. I look forward to the videos that you're going to have, the guests you're going to have on. You know, I'm a fan of Dr. Artis as well. And I look forward to talking with you again as well and finding out about your book. I think you're doing great stuff.
Thank you, Mike. I've been a fan of yours for quite a while too, and I appreciate everything that you do.
Well, man, thank you for that. That means a lot. And I am a recent fan of yours, and I wish you the best in your content and your book and everything. And keep in touch, and we'll help share your message with the world out there. So just glad that you're here. Glad that you're doing what you're doing. You got a lot of balls, and you're a ball buster at the same time. That's cool.
I love it. Thank you, sir. You have a great
All right. Thanks you too. Have a great day. Absolutely. That's Daniel Christos, everybody, from Ball Busters, B-A-A-L. And of course, as always, feel free to share this interview on other channels and other, you know, other platforms as well. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com, and we built the platform so that people like Daniel can use it to, you know, speak freely and ask big questions. So that's it. Thank you for joining me today, everybody. Take care.